So good morning. Lovely to see you all. I've been away for a few weeks. It's good to be home and here on a Sunday morning. I wanted to talk today a little bit about a very compelling film I saw about a week ago. It's still playing at the Film Forum. So this is kind of like a bit of encouragement for you. It's Marguerite von Trotta's Hannah Arendt. It's a very, very strong film. You may not know who Hannah Arendt is, or you may know very well, depending on your background. She's a German Jew, grew up during the Nazi era in Germany, was pursuing her philosophical studies. She left Germany in time and lived in Paris, met with Benjamin and other exiles, intellectuals, Jewish intellectuals. She was actually interned very briefly in Paris, but managed to immigrate to the United States and lived here in New York. She taught at the University of Chicago, at Princeton, but primarily at the New School, so right here in our neighborhood. And the film focuses on one little incident in her life, a very well-known one, in which she went to Israel and witnessed Adolf Eichmann's trial for the New Yorker magazine and wrote a five-part series that later became a book called Eichmann in Jerusalem. Adolf Eichmann was a high-level Nazi officer, and his job was to supervise the transporting, the imprisoning, and the killing of Jews and others that were so-called enemies of the Reich. In the concentration camps in Poland and parts of the Soviet Union. It is said that Eichmann was responsible for transporting 1.5 million people to concentration camps and work camps. So this is this person, right? And there's a long story that you may, Costa Gravas made a film that you may know about how he was captured. He escaped capture and lived in Argentina for a long time and then was finally captured by the Israeli intelligence agents and brought to Israel and tried and was executed. He was the one person that was hanged. So it was very important in the history of the world, this particular trial, that Hannah Arendt contracted with the New Yorker to write about. And she was very struck by what she saw at the trial. And she did not see the devil. She did not see a prince of darkness. What she saw was a creepy civil servant with no conscience. She was surprised and disgusted by her insight. She called it Eichmann's cliched performance on the stand. What she saw was a mediocre man who had acted in a thoughtless, automatic, and bureaucratic way. And she called this not the epitome of evil versus good, but the banality of evil. What did she mean by banal? That this evil that he expressed was not some romantic or powerful or grand functioning, but it rather emanated from a trivial, commonplace, and boring aspect aspect of our natures. This was not a man, in her view, of great passion, but rather an automaton, a mindless functionary, such as we might find in various states, here and elsewhere. She called him a middle-level manager who went through the motions of his job without what she called thinking. He was not a monster, she said, but a clown. Now, I want to just say that there were many people that did not agree with her and that argued with her. This was an extremely controversial position to take. And there was contravening evidence that Eichmann, in fact, held a very strong racist Nazi views. But what I was interested in, and what I think is new and important aspect of Arendt's argument, is this idea, this demand, that we look at our thinking, at how we think in our day-to-day lives. Are we on automatic, or are we thinking? Her thesis was that a person like Eichmann could function without thinking about what he was doing, the implication at all, but merely being very successful at managing to transport these people and manage these logistics, to bury himself in the day-to-day functioning of his position without doing any moral thinking. And Arendt said, "And if you cannot think in a moral way, you are not a person. You're not a human." So I just was very taken by this and thought, you know, how is it that we, in our own lives, how often do we neglect this kind of thinking? Just go along with the flow in this place that we live, in the communities and businesses and organizations that we belong to. How often we just go on automatic and don't look at the problematic moral and ethical aspects of what we're involved with. You could think of our involvement with the ecological crisis in this country, to the poverty in the world, to any number of injustices, of which we may serve, or organizations we belong to, where we may serve as a tiny cog in a wheel that is immoral and unethical and is causing suffering. Unless we stop and think, what is my role in this? What is it that I'm doing? We can't really be a force for good in this world. We are not living a wholesome life. We are not really, truly human. So, sometimes we feel like, well, but what can I do about this? And we have many choices, on a large, grand scale or on a small scale. We can petition, we can protest, we can make our voices heard, we can donate, we can look at our usage of plastic bags, we can talk to people, we can be a part of the world and make difference. So, you might wonder why I'm talking about this on a Sunday morning at the Village Zindo. But after ranting about this at dinner, after I saw the film, I was asked by a rather perceptive person How do you reconcile this with Dogen's not thinking? Drop the thought. Non-thinking. Are these the same thing? This discriminatory moral and ethical thinking about what we do, is that what we want to drop when we drop the thought in our Zen meditation? Samadhi comes from the Sanskrit. Samadhi is the state or the activity of our practice when we are practicing wholly and completely, samadhi. And it comes from a Sanskrit word meaning to bring together completely. We stop the individual, indiscriminate elements of our thinking, the wild back and forth, and we stop all of those waves of the mind so that we can bring the whole thing together. And not how successful we were in this task, but what is this task's relationship to the whole? When we do Zazen, we create a space in our heart, in our minds, that is spacious, is free, that is a release from that conditioned way we have of thinking, that low-level kind of thinking that we do most of the time. So it's not so much non-thinking as, I'll get to in a moment, as beyond thinking. That's why we say we come back to ourselves. We realize who we truly are in much greater depth than that kind of surface conditioned thinking. Kaz Ta-Nehisi has translated another fascicle of Dogen's called The Point of Zazen. And he translated this as beyond thinking. In the famous koan that Yao Shan was sitting one day, and a monk came up and said, in steadfast sitting, what do you think? So, you know, how many times am I asked that during a doksan on any day? What do you think when you're just sitting there? Yao Shan answered, think, not thinking. The monk said, well, how do you think not thinking? Yao Shan said, beyond thinking. So dropping the thought isn't the end of it. When we drop the conditioned thinking, we release ourselves into this open and wide space of potentiality. Our realization of our connection to everything. Our realization that we are everything. Dogen says, think not thinking is the skin, flesh, bones, and marrow of thinking. That's very Dogen-esque, isn't it? Think non-thinking is the skin, flesh, bones, and marrow of thinking. And the skin, flesh, bones, and marrow of not thinking. Thinking, not thinking, beyond thinking. We're talking about resonating with the Dharmakaya. Resonating with the whole reality. Not neglecting the specifics of each moment, not neglecting the moral sphere of the moment. You know, nowadays, in the media, all the talk about meditation is about neuroscience. Like, somehow, if we can measure it, we'll understand it. Over here is my fear, and over here is my compassion. So we think, and it's like these areas heat up, you know, who knows. I think it may be helpful in terms of looking at potential brain disease and so forth. I think the work is good. But in our ordinary lives, I assure you, this neuroscience is not going to help us. How do we discern the wholesome way to live our lives? How do we discern the wise and spacious activity of our hearts and minds and our daily lives in the marketplace? If we're sitting zazen to zone out, to numb ourselves from our pain, you know, we can very easily be transported to some fantasy land that has no edge. We transport ourselves to some fantasy land that doesn't impact our lives. And we wind up defeating the very instinct that we have that brought us to practice in the first place. Because where we are is right here. Not in the fifth tushita heaven. It is here that we make our moral and ethical decisions. It is here that we find ways to make changes in our city, our state, our world. And I call this wisdom. This is Prajnaparamita, the great wisdom. This is when we open our hearts, see what is the right thing to do in this situation. And it comes from our meditation practice. Think non-thinking. Go deeper than that, to that beyond, that great spacious reality. There was a Tang Dynasty poet by the name of Shite. He used to hang out with Hanshan, and there were two very famous poets. And Shite wrote about meditation in this way, this poem. Not going, not coming, rooted, deep and still. Not reaching out, not reaching in. Just resting at the center. A single jewel, a flawless crystal drop in the blaze of brilliance, the way beyond. Not going, not coming. This is what, as we sit in our practice and the thoughts, oh my gosh, I've got to do this, I've got to do that, just letting that, letting those waves of the mind recede, rooted, deep and still, but not leaving yourself. Rooted, deep and still, in your breath. Not reaching out, not reaching in. Not trying to achieve some state, but rooted right there. As he says, just resting at the center. Can you just rest in your zazen? Not sleep, but rest. And then he says, a single jewel, the flawless crystal drop. What is that single jewel? What is that image? Isn't it you? The flawless jewel? Right in the heart of your breath? And then he says, in the blaze of its brilliance, the way beyond. That's how we see the way, our way, in this great world. So that's just our practice. We just sit here in the midst of the sirens, the waves of thinking. And at the same time, we're rooted in this space of beyond thinking. Zazen affirms our life. We resist it. We don't know why we resist it, because when we do it, we know it's good. And that's why we come together, encourage one another to do this. And when I think, when we sync up with the universe on a regular basis, sync up, that's going beyond. I don't think we can act in that unconscious, automatic way that we see in Eichmann's case, or in Hannah Arendt's version of Eichmann's case. Was he ever connected to his real being? Hannah Arendt was onto something when she said, you have to think in order to be a real person. Dogen was on to something when he quoted Yao Shand, beyond thinking. Let me encourage you to work with this koan. It's a good koan. Here's a gatha for you. There is the whole. There are the parts. We are one. We are many. Only going beyond thinking do we taste our true nature.